Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome to Base Action Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Just met Warren aboard S&P futures after a huge run from the down low yesterday. Being down well into the high 30s, we flew up to be up 15 at the close. We're now down 16. Very strange movement. A huge move yesterday. Not sure what caused that to come back, as the WHO did say there was an emergency on the coronavirus, but evidently they could have been worse, so that kicked us back to the upside, or maybe we're just down too much, but now we're down again today. Biggest news last night was Amazon came out. They're up $250. We'll check on them in a minute. So if you look at their earnings, they'd be 10 times earnings per share if just on the move yesterday. Very, very strange. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. Happy, is it Super Friday?
It's something, yeah.
I like that, Super Friday.
Did you happen to spot that? We had a lot of stuff to talk about this morning. Things that, you know, I've learned over the evening. And did you know that if you do not have an ID, say you get mugged, that you need to get back on a plane, that you can use the police report?
Oh, as identification?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. I have to get out and get mugged. How about if I get arrested? That's more fun.
I'm sure
I can have more fun getting arrested than getting mugged.
Well, then you have a picture ID from that. You get the mugshot.
Yeah.
But they would if they let you out.
Wouldn't it be cool to have your passport photo be a mugshot?
God. Mine kind of looks like one anyway. So
I was going to say.
Turn sideways, please.
mine already looks like one, because they tell you, like, look plain, don't smile, blah, 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 and it's not a very becoming picture.
No. No, it definitely is not. But, just when we were talking about the Amazon thing last night, I was get an email from somebody, and interesting. It's a young lady lawyer who was a listener to the show, and it was a. Everybody knows that Amazon is just going to basically wreck everybody else's business, and when they drive them out of business, they're just going to raise prices and make more money. Everybody knows that, Kevin. Do you think anybody knows that that's illegal? Like every corner of the globe, that's illegal.
So, well, it's probably a good idea, you know, spell that out a little bit for the listeners.
Well, the idea, I mean, this is what, I don't know, I have all kinds of issues with, I blame it all on Father Fitzgerald. The year, half a semester I had with him where all he talked about was antitrust laws and those kinds of things and how people are essentially supposed to behave in business. And I have to say, Kevin, it has to be one of the least known areas of how people should act that I ever come across. I mean, it's the idea of how predatory pricing and the idea, like, I think out of all the stuff I talk about on the show, that goes over everybody's head more than anything I say. What do you mean? That's just good business. No, it's not. It's a felony. What are you talking about? A good business. If you have a company that's, I'll use Viagra. If you're using Viagra, all of a sudden your patent comes off. All right, so Maddie Weber's firm starts making generic Viagra. Well, I say, well, hell.
Thank you, Maddie.
Yeah, thank you, Maddie. The hell with that. So I go in there and say, Maddie, how much you want for your firm? 20 mil. How about 25? Okay. So I buy your place, and immediately I quadruple the price or put you out of business. I'm going to say right now, today, Kevin, 90% of the people applaud that, and they say, that's just being a good businessman. Somehow we've got
until they have to pay until it's their time to buy Viagra, well, and they find out how
that nobody thinks of. The point is, that's a combination and restraint of trade, and it's a felony. and you said it to people. You look like you think you swear you have three heads the way they look at you. I don't.
Well, and while it's a felony, it's what we have is when those mergers get approved, it's a government sponsored felony.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And you know that's really the problem is. We have mechanism to, and I think it's important to step back. In fact, in a few weeks I will be teaching business law, so I will get into this kind of stuff all the time. And it's always important to step back and say, you know, why do we have the laws this way? What's it trying to accomplish? And of course, what we're trying to accomplish here should be obvious to people, but it isn't. And that's that. You know, the success of a capitalistic market depends on competition.
Right, and so
when you start eliminating competition, it can happen. We have provisions for monopolistic situations. For instance, a power company, because you're not going to have a power grid repeatedly created, and so we may do that, and that's a whole different can of worms. But otherwise, we don't allow every merger because some of them are anti-competitive, and yet now we do allow every merger. The law doesn't, but we do.
Right,
and I'm not sure when that started. I know, for instance, in the pharmaceutical industry, it ramped up after. After the Affordable Care Act passed, because it was the only way that companies were going to stay in business and that the whole thing wouldn't collapse. But it predates that in a lot of other
actually,
industries.
Kevin. I'll push back, and it was the only way they were going to stay away from a competitive exchange to not have enough companies to actually form an exchange. But
because what happened when there were competitive exchanges, they went out of business.
Well, I'm saying
they couldn't compete under non-competitive rules. So, how many companies dropped out of the exchanges?
Well,
the answer is they
combined.
Lot.
They combined, and it said, "Screw this! We'd rather steal from people on their own." I'm going to say, Kevin, and rightly or wrongly, most people would say that the total laxity in antitrust enforcement. Dates back to Reagan. Now, whether it started before him with Carter or Tricky Dick or Ford, I don't know. But people are.
Yeah, I don't remember it being an issue with Carter. Honestly, I just don't remember Nixon. Anything legislated about the Nixon era at all. All I remember is all the corruption and the chaos.
Well, the rumor is, and again, I should actually get somebody who's a historian in this from like a law school. The rumor is that because I joke about it all the time, that Reagan, during his 8 years, they didn't prosecute one antitrust case. Now, what they did with all the people in the antitrust department, I have no idea. I mean, you played golf every day, or you sat there and made... This is before you had computers on your desk, so what did you actually do? Just move the papers from the left side to the right side one day and back to the left?
Well, no, you could go through and document everything before approving it. You still have to have, you still have to have the requisite review.
But I mean, what I'm saying is
it's just a pointless exercise, but you still have the exercise.
But I don't know, I can't tell you whether the Carter administration prosecuted one or 500. I don't know if it was much of a change, is what I'm saying. I'll blame Dutch, but it doesn't mean it started under Dutch, let's put it that way. Because I don't know. I don't know, I guess I'm sure people...
Yeah, for all we know, it started under Eisenhower,
Well, you know what? It could very well have. Could very well have, to be honest with you. It couldn't have happened in the early 70s because they were clearly going the other way. If I was to probably a little up there, Kevin, but if I were to go back and get a PhD, I have so many different things I'd want to write about. If I was going to do a thesis. One would be on the demise of the exchanges and how it's hurting what I consider to be the securities markets. The other one is in our lifetime, not just in our lifetime, but in our lifetime that we read back about in the last whole century and everything, that I obviously I don't think we're experts on the Revolutionary War in that era, but we're getting fairly up on the 20th century, let's put it that way. I mean, I would never be considered a Civil War buff or anything like that. But economically, I keep trying to find as much as I can about the 20th century. And I'm stunned by what happened in the early 70s, Kevin, in the sense that we had totally regulated trucking companies. We had totally regulated airlines. I say airlines. The federal government essentially told you whether you could be in business or not. And because they listened to the airlines, there was not one new airline approved between 1930-something, whenever the CAB, the Civil Aeronautics Board, was put in existence. And I'm going to say 1980, 78, somewhere in there. And okay. So, and the airline travel had to go on up 100-fold. Yet every one of the airlines kept saying, "Oh, we got it covered. We don't need anybody new." And that's why in those days, Southwest Air only flew inside the state of Texas. They were an intrastate airline. They did not have the authority to fly from Texas to Oklahoma. And people look at it and think of that now. And I said, "What's he talking about?" No, they could not. And then they started with but somewhere in there, it was the same time, 1973, the CBOE started. And the CBOE was a dramatic change to the better in securities trading. It went back to competing market makers instead of a specialist that was one guy. You separated principal from agent. The people who did trades could not take the other side of the trade. Okay, Kevin, you should buy IBM. Who sold it to you? Well, I did. Okay, that's interesting, right? I mean, anybody over third grade education would say, that's not right. I mean, you could never be a real estate person saying, you should buy this house. By the way, who owns it? I do. Without disclosing that it's their house, right? Just saying. So, I mean, the CBOE was a huge step up. Somewhere in the 70s, right about when we were at Notre Dame, because a lot of it was a fait accompli by the time I got to the University of Chicago. And some of the guys there, Hans Stoll and a couple other people, that actually probably did more for the anti-competitive world than the people like Friedman and Stigler. They won the Nobel Prizes. These other guys that designed the CBOE, they're instrumental in the breaking up of the trucking companies. When I say the breaking up of the trucking companies, you couldn't just go buy a truck and then deliver a load of whatever rugs from Chicago to Iowa. You had to have authority from Chicago to Iowa. And there was no new authority. You had to go buy that authority from somebody else. I worked at the ICX, Illinois California Express, and we had authority. I was working there. I didn't own the place. From Chicago to Denver, Chicago to California, and Chicago to Phoenix. We couldn't stop in Omaha and drop something off. Couldn't pick something up there. If you had half a load, doesn't matter. You couldn't stop. So, anyway, all of a sudden there was this, we had a bunch of legislators that must have read the stuff that the professors were writing. And somehow or another, there was this combination of academia and Congress that said, this is just not right. And for a period of about 4 or 5 years, all this stuff got straightened out. Maybe it was more like 7 or 8 years. And Kevin, I never saw it before or since. And I'd really want to know what was so unusual about that time. I don't know if it was the...
Well, was part of the straightening it out using the... sort of changing the interpretation of the Commerce Clause.
I don't know.
The idea that because I know it really got pushed to the nth degree with the Affordable Care Act, where they said it's if it could be interstate commerce, then it's covered by the Commerce Clause, whether it actually is or not.
Well, I think one of the big issues
that was one of the arguments.
Right. Well, here's what I believe to be. For my buddies from the Fed, who are also attorneys, when they heard me arguing one day that there's no way you should get two prices at a hospital. If I walk in for an appendectomy off the street and I'm paying cash, it's probably going to be double or triple what Blue Cross pays. And no way anywhere by the Clayton Act is that legal. Yet they drug me out this law that's applied to the insurance companies. And this is somewhat technical. Because I read it sitting in a bar, and I said, "Wait a minute, this doesn't get them anywhere." What it does, it allows an insurance company, Kevin. They have a carve out from the Clayton Act, for lack of a better term. And again, if Lou was here, he could tell you exactly what it means. But there's a carve out from the Act that says if you walk in to an insurance company and you're 50 and you're a smoker and you're 800 pounds, they can charge you more than Mattie Weber, who's 35 in good shape and doesn't smoke. So they get essentially a carve out that says they can charge people of different ages, you know, maybe even in different industries. They probably could charge coal miners more than they could a a guy who works in hardware at Sears. I mean, I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they're, it has to have statistical backing, but right. As long as it does, they can do discriminatory pricing like that. And when it comes to insurance, that probably makes sense, doesn't
right.
it not?
Yes, but now what they've done is they have taken this piece of paper with this law on it and have said that also applies to us getting better prices at hospitals. Even though, I mean, you and I would say, all right, if I'm going to show up with eight people, you know, naked from the waist down, in a gurney, all set up to do appendectomies in one day, well, yeah, there will be somewhat of a discount on that because we can get all the doctors together and we can knock off 10 appendectomies in one day. That part I get. But that's not what's happening. They just get a different price than you or I do.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, Carl has said that is lost in court in the past, and they still do it.
They still do it. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of rubs here that are really, that are the problems. And you know, I also want to touch on, because I don't really want to talk about Super Bowl and this huge bet that somebody put down, but, you know, I was in a full service discussion with Lou yesterday about this new act with, and again, this is how you can talk on different levels. The Supreme Court decision about people coming in and maybe having to use benefits or things that are, you know, that citizens pay for here.
Yeah, by the way, I'm going to lose sight on that. So
that doesn't surprise me.
Go ahead.
That doesn't surprise me. But the, my issue with that, Kevin, is the idea that I think you need to understand before you develop these opinions exactly what the tax nature of things are and exactly where the rest of the population lands. Now, you look at people coming in here, and you look at what it takes to be in a position to not use a federal benefit or a state benefit or any benefit whatsoever. When the chances of those people, anybody, whoever it is, unless you're dragging some Chinese guy who's been stealing money off of corporations and has $1 million, the person you bring in is never going to be in the upper 50% of the population walking in the door. I mean, that's why he's coming here, right? So, if you, in other words, right now the way people's payroll is, and I'm looking at my page here, we're still $36,000. I'll get the actual number. I'm gonna start here. First of all, the minute somebody walks in the door, and this is what grieves the living piss out of me, is if somebody making money on CNBC that maybe doesn't even know anything, but they're making money, says, well, these people like don't pay any taxes. I advise everybody to go to the my stupid page here, USNationalDebtClock.org. There's four legs to this stool, Kevin. The person who comes in from Mexico or Moon or wherever he comes in from, he immediately is going to start paying the payroll tax, okay, which is covers your unemployment and stuff. Immediately he's going to start paying a state tax, which covers Medicaid, or is supposed to cover Medicaid and stuff, except for the federal government contribution. He's immediately going to pay some sort of local tax, sales tax. He's living in somebody's house, you know, he's not going to be living on the street, I hope. Living in somebody's house, they're paying. So you're immediately paying for roughly 80 or 90% of all the benefits you get. Right? It's not like they're all coming out of the federal tax coffer. They don't. And that person is paying those taxes the day in.
I understand that, Tom. Now, the question is, if you're coming to this country to work because you can't find work or you're coming for a better economic life, then what's wrong with saying, okay, come on in, get a job?
Well, I have no problem with that. The problem,
I think that's all it's really saying. Now, if you don't like the technicals of it, or you don't like the process, or you don't like, or there are some benefits where you don't want to limit access, this is real simple. You get it done legislatively. All this is really doing is this is undoing an executive order, and executive orders weren't meant to be a substitute for legislation.
That part I get. But maybe I should have Lou argue my point. Maybe you do a better job. My point being is if somebody walks across the border or flies in or whatever and gets a jab on day one, okay, if, unless he's a doctor or a bit twiddler at some you know, think tank, he's immediately going to be at a level of pay at which everybody here gets benefits because they don't make enough.
That's not necessarily true, but if you want to make that case, then I think it's fine. I think it's a discussable item, but that's not what the counter case to this is. The counter case is that you should be able to, you should be able to move in, immediately qualify for welfare whether you get a job or not. And, you know, that's not a sustainable situation.
I guess
that's just not a rational immigration policy, as far as I'm concerned.
The argument you and Lou are having against me is
the correct one, of course.
On paper, probably yes, but in actuality, I think no, because the part that flows through here that I keep trying to make a point of, and obviously I keep screwing it up, is unbeknownst to our, not idiots individually, but idiotic politicians and the people in government and the people who make a lot of money, okay, is that most of the problems that people are having now with not having enough money are people that are working. And mentally, they still think that people that are broke don't work. And that's absolutely wrong now. So that's my point.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. However, look, as far as I'm concerned, most of the objections are built around providing support for people who come into the country illegally.
Right.
And that's where the problem is, because that's when it becomes very, very difficult to get a sustainable wage. If you were to come in legally and say, I am here to work in construction, because they're having a hell of a time filling construction jobs in this country. And if you were to say, I could come in and I'll work, if they need me for 10 hours a day, I'll work construction, you can do that. It's when you come in and you get hired illegally that you are at the mercy of the employers, the shady employers, who then are perfectly willing to underpay you, and leave you in a situation where you're kind of a damned if you do and damned if you don't in terms of, your ability to get ahead. And that's where our big problem is. But, there's a lot invested in that particular, a lot of money behind maintaining that status quo.
But we don't know. From this group of people in Washington, we don't ever really know the numbers, Kevin. Here's my point.
I don't trust any of them.
Yeah. We got 1 minute. We can back.
That's the problem. And in my world, the most serious punishments when it comes to illegal immigration issues, it would be to the employers.
Well, okay. What I'm saying here's my. I'll try and keep it. We only got a minute. I'll keep it as quick as I can. I'm going to use the term Jose. Comes over here with his family, his wife, daughter. He says, I'll get a job tomorrow. He's $12 an hour. His wife is going to work, help at a, she maybe doesn't know the language, she's going to help in a child care facility or something. She's making 10. What I'm saying is, at that level, Kevin, but they're helping out. That's the going wage in those two industries, okay, for people that are here. They're in that. They go get those two jobs. And I'm saying, those two people, now, because they're not making very much, but they're working every day, they qualify for food stamps and they qualify for Medicaid. So you're not going to give it to them? I don't get that.
Like I said, Tom, then you lay out the parameters for how that's going to work. So is it reasonable to say if you just come in and you move in with Cousin Al, then you qualify? Well, do you qualify then? And if you're fine with the answer no, then have the other conversation and take the scenario you just laid out and say the answer to that is yes.
Well, because we're on my point is
maybe there's a base level of income or something like that. But if you just take the executive order status quo, it's never going to get addressed.
Well, that's probably the truth. S&P futures now we're only down 11. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks talk about all the earnings and all the stuff from last night.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hawes, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Matt, I just have to tell you that even though you are an ace reporter when it comes to sports and other things, there is a certain group on the show that wants to listen to AB try and name the Bulls, Bucks, that kind of thing in her accent. Just saying.
Name the Bulls, Bucks?
Well, in her accent, just when she tries to come up with the names of the teams.
Oh, when she reads?
When she reads of this, it's hilarious in the accent because she has no idea. Yesterday she thought the Pacers were another car part, like the Pistons. Anyway, but she's developed a following with that. I'm just saying, you know. You never know.
That's SP, good.
SP futures down 11.25. They were down a lot more a bit ago. Yesterday we went from even to down 30 in the S&Ps probably three times before we settled up on the day. So yesterday was, if you were a scalper during the day and caught the first move, you caught about four others. I mean, interesting day. A lot of it has to do with this virus, the numbers you believe, with the earnings coming out. Anyway, individual stocks, we've got Caterpillar down $1.37. They actually disappointed. I thought it would be down more than that. Amazon was up $2.50. Now it's only up $1.95 as they came out with $6 in earnings versus $4-something. So it was a big beat. But again, you're talking about $24 a year on a $200-some-thousand-dollar stock. You know, I don't know about that. But if you think they're going to rule the world in 5 years, I guess it's a bargain. Electronic Arts, they came in, they're down $1.59, they're trading $1.10. You know, they missed a little bit, but so not much except for the Amazon was a big mover last night. The rest of them are, this is a good one though. Maddie, I don't want to hear this about you or Kevin ever, you know, even if I'm up in the clouds someday or wherever the hell I end up, that you guys were thrown out, not thrown out. Step down as CEO stock rallies. So Ginni Rometty, who's been at the helm of IBM, I believe, since 2012, elected to step down, and somebody named Arvind Krishna is taking over, and IBM is up like $6. I don't want to see that.
That's not a great headline to read after you've stepped down.
Of course, she probably has enough stock to where she's happy about it, but still. Anyway, around the rest of the world, might as well finish this up. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 38.3%, FTSE down 47.6%, CAC around down 21.4%. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei up, finally up, after being clobbered 3 days in a row. Up 227, that's full 1%. Shanghai's still not open, so they obviously have extended the Lunar New Year celebration to include the stock exchanges. I think they're supposed to reopen today, but they are not. Hang Seng, however, is open down 136.5%. Bonds, 155, nothing changed there. One minus port 41, nothing changed there. Japan, a little lower, actually. More negative, shall we say. Minus 0.05. Oil, up 39 cents. Brent up 31, but still 52.53, still very low. Natural gas, 183. RBOB, 150. Gold is down $5. Still, 1583 is pretty high. Silver down 16 cents. 1783. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Was that your 500 grand on, Kansas City?
Not quite. Close.
There you go.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a significant rollover crash up in the northern suburbs on I-94, headed northbound toward the Wisconsin border just before Route 176, which is Rockland Road. There is a rollover crash blocking the three right lanes. And this has solid traffic on I-94, so keep that in mind if you're heading northbound towards Wisconsin, as it'll be a while before this one gets cleared. That's the only major news right now. In spite of some overnight snowfall, everyone's behaving themselves on the Edens and Kennedy. No issues to report on the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Off the expressways, a couple of issues. Route 22 at Old Rand Road, there is an accident in the northwestern suburbs. South of there, Hanover Park, Rodenburg Road at Central Avenue, there's a crash. West of there, Bodie Road at Shales Parkway, there's a crash. And just north of that, that just went away, so that must have been cleared. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, some flurries continues throughout the morning, but not expecting much for accumulation. And then the temperatures will get above freezing. We'll be cloudy with a high of 37 today. Right now it is snowy and 31 degrees downtown. About an inch of ground, inch of snow on the ground in some of the outlying areas. Downtown it's just wet. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 73 today. Right now it is clear and 43. In sports, Blackhawks were off last night. They'll return to action tomorrow at Arizona. They'll take on the Coyotes, who lost to the Kings last night 3-2. NBA basketball, Bulls and Suns were both off. Bulls are at the Brooklyn Nets tonight. That's a 6:30 Chicago time tip-off. Suns will host the Oklahoma City Thunder at 7 p.m. Arizona time. College hoops, Illinois has now won 7 straight Big Ten games, and they're tied atop the conference with Michigan State after hanging on to beat Minnesota 59-51 down in Champaign last night. Illini looking good.
Have either of you guys seen them play? I have not. Are they as good as the record sounds?
I've watched them play a lot, and they have three really good guards. Their AO, who was the freshman last year, came back for his sophomore year when he could have went pro, and he's been spectacular. Trent Frazier is an upperclassman who's a solid point guard. And then they have this Feliz guy who's like their guard off the bench, and they play them all three together, and they're very good. They can all handle the ball. They can all score. And then they have two really good big guys, a freshman and a sophomore, Coburn and Georgie, who was the good freshman last year. And they're not very deep, but their five guys that they play a lot of minutes are really good, and their coach is good.
Oh, the other coach is where? It's a Kansas State or something? Weber?
Bruce Weber. Yeah, he's been at Kansas State for about 6 or 7 years. Lastly, Arizona with a nice road win at Washington last night, 75-72.
Chief. So here's a story out of Miami. MGM reports that a tall, slender lad named Matt from Stocks and Jocks came in and put $550,000 on the Chiefs as a 1-point favorite, and now they move the line to a 1.5 favorite. Although they are not happy about moving it because they seem to have rumors that somebody's coming in later in the week, maybe Kevin O'Neill, to put like amount of money on the 49ers. So there. Anyway.
You know, it's interesting. Before we get away from the IBM story, just the fellow who's being moved into the CEO spot is the person who has been driving the integration of Red Hat into IBM. You may remember it's probably been about 2 years now since that acquisition, and it's very, you know, often enough acquisitions, you know, tend to dilute the value of the company because it's just so hard to integrate.
They overpaid for it. Stone cold,
you know,
like a pig.
They built their whole cloud strategy around this, and IBM has made a lot of inroads, and it's been very successful. So I think the market is reacting to putting somebody with a pretty strong vision of what IBM can be into the CEO role. So, I don't know that it's as much a slam on the outgoing CEO because, you know, she was part of that too, as it is saying, hey, good choice. So we'll see if that levels off.
Well,
anyway, back to the betting.
Well, wait a second, since you brought that up, I think the slam on her a little bit. This is just one man's opinion. Is that he is the vision of where this redhead is now becoming incremental and actually making it worthwhile for them to have bought them, because the joke for the last 2 years since they bought them is how ridiculously high they paid for the company. So I'm saying that the stupid price they paid is probably on her. The development of how it's actually starting to work out for him is probably on him. Is that fair?
Yeah, that may be, and I sure don't know who else was trying to get their hands on Red Hat at the time, and, you know, so there may have been a bidding war, and that may wind up being, a completely visionary move when the history is written, or it may be that, yeah, she just overpaid. She should have paid, you know, hundreds of millions less.
How about Google? I think they paid well over double of where the stock was traded. I don't think there was a hint of another bidder, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't know that. So I really couldn't comment effectively on
that. If you got a second, Google bought IBM takeover Red Hat. I think it was they paid over double. But I'm willing to be wrong here because it's been a while ago. But Kevin, are you going to try?
You want to know how much they paid?
Well, just say because the rumor was
they bought them for $34 billion.
And does it give you a share of stock and where it was trading before they bid? I think they paid like 50, and the stock had been like 22 or something. Something bizarre like that. Where there was not even a smidge of somebody coming in and saying,
"Was there somebody else out there with a $32 billion bid?"
I don't know. I'm saying the answer to that is
it just says IBM and Red Hat announced today that they have closed the transaction under which IBM acquired all of the issued and outstanding common shares of Red Hat for $190 per share in cash, representing a total equity value of approximately $34 billion.
Yeah, and I'm going to say the thing was under 100 the day before or something. It was real. I mean, it was a huge. It was one of the biggest. Accretion to market value that I had ever seen, and it was like they can't be serious. I mean, what are they seeing there? Nobody else does for like a month afterward. I do remember that, but because I'm not an expert on what Red Hat does at all. But what do they do, Kevin? Were they in the cloud even then, or was it?
They actually were, and they were in with a lot of open source software, their own version of Linux, et cetera. So, nowadays where cloud is moving, you know, whereas it started out as software as a service, then it moved into capacity on demand, and they're at the point now where you're doing apps without buying servers time. You're just going right into developing the apps, and that's kind of where Red Hat lived anyway.
Well, I was
so, like if you go on Amazon Web Services, they have things like Lambda where you just say, okay, I just need an app. I just need to run an app. I don't care where you put it. It's out there in the cloud somewhere. I don't need to know where you put it. It integrates with my own stuff. It might even, it might even draw, reach into my network and draw, but I don't go in and license a version of Microsoft SQL Server, Microsoft Windows Server and SQL Server and all those. I just say, here's an app, run it, at a certain frequency, and it just happens like
is,
that.
Is Linux still like, Linux at one time, again, just I'm walking into an area, I'm asking questions, wasn't Linux, you actually could use that instead of Microsoft?
Yes. Yeah, you could. Always the constraint with it comes down, it's a business issue, not a technology issue, although there is a whole lot more software that you can buy off the shelf that is made for Microsoft. But your real problem is, because I know of businesses that ran everything on Linux and then would go on and get all kinds of open source stuff to run. The problem is, can you find the talent to support it? Because it's not as plentiful. The old adage in the 70s was nobody ever got fired for choosing IBM. Well, nobody ever gets fired now for choosing a Microsoft runtime environment and maybe doing it on VMware or something like that as your hypervisor.
But if I wanted to go out and buy a computer and not use anything Microsoft, could I?
Yeah.
How? They all come with the stuff already in.
You boot up Linux. It sort of depends on what you want to do, and you have to have the... I don't know if you can buy software for what you do that doesn't run on Microsoft, but if you wanted to develop it, you would just develop it in Apache, use MySQL database. You could do it all for free.
But I mean, how would I, if I get a machine and I wanted to download Linux, how could I do it without something where I could download it with?
So you buy it on a disk and load it.
Oh, all right. See, this is stuff that I don't know. Anyway, so I've got these guys have the 49ers -105. Is that what you got, Manny?
I can look here. By the way, I would never put a bet of that magnitude down on the Chiefs because I actually like the 49ers in this game.
Do you really? I was a
no one does, which makes me do.
funny you should mention that because the people I was having a discussion with last night, every one of them was like, "How can anybody bet the 49ers?" I said, "Well, they have a really balanced, really good team." I mean, I was actually stunned at how good.
If you watch the 49ers in the playoffs, what's your impression?
That they're balanced and good at everything.
Did you get balance out of that, or did you get, hey, they're a running team. They're just another version of the Tennessee Titans.
But I think...
If you watched them in the playoffs, they absolutely will exploit the other team's defense. So if the other team's letting you run for 4, 5, 6 yards a carry, they're just going to keep pounding the ball. I mean...
Yeah, they have the discipline to just say, okay, I'll keep running.
Yep.
Take a lesson, Matt Nagy. Take a lesson, Brian Kelly.
Exactly right. But if you watched them in the New Orleans in the regular season when the running game was not working and they had to get into a shootout, they put up 40-some points on the road at the Saints, and it was all passing, and they won that way, too.
They have more ability to pass than Tennessee.
So we don't think of the high-powered San Francisco offense. Guess who are the number 2 and number 3 scoring teams in the NFL in that order?
San Francisco is probably one of them, and the Chiefs probably.
Yeah, which one's number 2 and which one's number 3?
I'm thinking Kansas City's probably 3.
Yeah,
well, you asked the question.
Number 2. No, it's close. It's 30.2 points to 29.8. But, San Francisco puts up the points. If you wanted to look at, let me pull up player stats here and get...
Who's number 1, by the way?
And we know, we'll go with QB rating... and we know that Patrick Mahomes is really good, and in fact, he is the number 3 rated QB with a rating of 106.9 on the season. But did you know Jimmy Garoppolo's number 8 at 101.0?
I actually.
In other words, he's very good.
Yeah, here's where I'm coming from on this, and you guys, of course, more sports oriented. I've always thought, Kevin, that if you can do it and stay healthy, if you can be in the pro game and be a quarterback that 3 or 4 times a game, you can run and you force one of the guys in the defense to watch you, and you have the you know good ends and backs like other all these teams at this level do. It's one less guy coverage. It is such a dramatic advantage, and essentially a one game playoff that I think it's the wild card that I'll always kind of go with if the rest of the teams I think are even.
Yeah, and that may be the X factor because I think Mahomes is the better runner.
Because nobody has done it better than, when I say mentally, nobody's done it better than Russell Wilson for his career. I mean, and his career isn't, you know, hasn't been that long yet, but still, the guy's awful freaking good. I mean, a Bobby Douglas, his running was the Bears couldn't block, so he just ran. He was big enough. He was almost like a fullback, and he ran over people, and he was an unusual sort of guy. But he also got hurt.
They didn't call running plays for Bobby Douglas. He got chased.
Right, and he also got hurt. But the idea is if you can wait until the defense is kind of puffing and puffing anyway, and then the quarterback runs two plays in a row, nothing buries those guys more than that.
Or converting like a third and eight where they have everyone covered and you're able to scramble at the last minute and step out of bounds, get the first down, avoid the hit, and move the chains. That is a backbreaker.
But having said that, what I'm going to go with on Matty here, I've never seen a defensive line recently like the line in San Francisco where everybody looks like a track star, not a big fatso. If anybody can chase anybody, it's those guys. And not be gassed at the end of the play. We're not talking about Ted Washington running 20 yards. This guy Bosa looks like he's a sprinter, for God's sake. So, I mean, that might be the X factor right back, Matty. What do you think?
Well, it's definitely hard to bet against the Chiefs, and no one would be surprised if the Chiefs, you know, come out and are just explosive and unstoppable and win this game. But I just think that the 49ers are a perfectly and completely balanced team on both sides of the ball, and I don't think the Chiefs are. I think the 49ers run the ball better. I think the 49ers rush the passer better. I think the tight end situation is a wash, whereas Kansas City has had a tight end advantage, you know, against everyone else, but not against George Kittle and the 49ers. I think the coaching matchup is a wash. I think Kyle Shanahan is a really good coach, and I think Andy Reid's a good coach. And like Kevin said, Garoppolo, no one is saying he's better than Mahomes, but he's not a slouch. I mean, he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. So I think it's going to come down to, whose defense is better and who can run the ball better, and I think the 49ers win both of those.
Matty, whatever.
Yeah, I think another way to say it, Matt, is that the 49ers have more ways to win.
Exactly. Exactly right.
I can see Matty Weber saying it.
I'm kind of going with them, too, I think. So that definitely ought to discourage bettors.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of a pick 'em. Now, the coach story is kind of interesting, too, isn't it? You have Andy Reid, you know, where everybody's saying, will he finally get his Super Bowl? He's been a successful coach for a long time, but he's never won the Super Bowl. And on the other hand, are we going to do the father and son win Super Bowls routine with the Shanahans?
Yeah,
that's a nice, interesting little part of the story.
Did you guys? Why do I keep thinking of Matty Weber? And I'm no slouch myself. Ah, you're a perfect slouch, Judge.
Yes. Yeah, give yourself credit. You're a great slouch.
You're a great slouch. Did you guys read, one of the things that was flashed across my Yahoo, stupid stuff I read, it was the 40 greatest quarterbacks of all time. And they listed them, and there's really no...
I haven't looked at it. Who did they pick?
They had, what's his name, number one, Brady. But the interesting part in there is when you start to walk your way through the teams people had, the teams they were on, how much they had to do versus how much... You know, they didn't have to do. And the idea of individual stats versus winning in Super Bowls, it's really very difficult to draw that line, to statistically try and figure out who's the better player based on the combination of individual statistics versus something else versus winning. I mean,
I think that's a challenge. I think the era people play, where the different quarterbacks played is such a big factor, and one that is that when I hear people talking about greatest quarterbacks, I don't think they allow for it at all, because statistically there's no way you're going to pile up the statistics. If you go back to the guys like a Unitas or a Starr or somebody like that, there's no way they're going to match the statistics. Part of that was how the game was played at the time, but part of that is that nowadays you're not allowed to touch a receiver after 5 yards.
Well,
which,
right. Yeah.
You know, makes it a whole lot easier to pass than when you could just beat on them all the way down the field playing bump and run, and then as long as the ball wasn't in the air, you could clobber the guy as many times as you wanted. So it was way harder to get open in those days. And you also had another factor where quarterbacks used to be, you know, always call their own plays. It was really Tom Landry with, you know, in the Roger Staubach days, who was a big eye-opener because he was calling the plays and sending them in from the sideline. That was something you only did with rookies.
Well, first guy to do that
was... else was expected to not only execute a game plan by, you know, taking the snap and doing what they're supposed to do, but they were supposed to be on the field calling the plays. And so game preparation was a whole different thing. I don't know how you compare that against what people do today. I'm not saying they're better. I'm not saying they're worse. I'm just saying I don't know how you compare them.
Well, the difference in that particular spot, well, possibly you look at like regular people, obviously it's a full-time job now. So the difference in what just people look like when it's all, their whole job all year long is to work out for this game versus having another job and showing up, I mean, you're going to look different. I mean, Doug Atkins would look different. Ed Obradovich would look different. They all would. Dick Butkus would look different, right? They would be better. But they're also the one spot that I think that you, the quarterbacks in the 50s and 60s were just as big as the guys today. And some of them were just as fast. I mean, a few of them were. You couldn't tell in those fields what they were all playing in the mud and everything. But it is interesting when you look at like a Dan Fouts. Now, Dan was a spectacular quarterback, but he was also on a team that they were the first team that the offensive line was designed for pass protection. Eric Coryell. I mean, did they ever run, Kevin? I mean, if they did, those guys, there were no...
Yeah, when they had Chuck Muncy, they ran.
But they had... You weren't pulling guards there. You were pass-protecting guards, right? I mean, there is a difference, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, but it's hard to... Like, they have Bart Starr, won four or five... He won all those championships. So you got Bart Starr in the top 10. Yet there's no way on earth, if you and I have a college or a pro and Bart Starr walks out on the field with Staubach or Johnny Unitas, that Starr's the starter. there's no chance. The other guys are bigger, faster, stronger, right? I mean, it doesn't make him not a spectacular guy for his team at his time, but I don't know that you could put him up against Roger Staubach and say he's the better player. I mean, I
think you could say the same thing about Brady and Montana and Bradshaw. All three were just in perfect situations where they excelled and they won and they were spectacular and great, but they weren't the strongest arm, you know, most athletic guy.
I would say,
and if they were in the wrong situation, they might not have even been that good. I don't know.
We'll pull one name out of there though. But Joe Montana had a talent even today very few people have. He could throw running to his left on the run probably better than anybody I've ever seen.
And that is a skill that a lot of guys don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Joe Montana, he had a good arm, but not a great arm.
Right.
He had, coming out of college, he slipped in the draft, not because people didn't think he could be pretty good, but because he was erratic. You know, I used to say in college, I never saw Joe Montana play a bad game, but I saw him play lots of bad halves.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Only to come back and then just, you know, kick booty in the second half. So, that was his MO. So, you know, were all these guys perfect? Yeah, I agree with you, Tom, that, you know, if you get in the right place, you know, would Joe Montana have been as good if he got stuck playing for the Bears instead of for Bill Walsh? Well, you know, I kind of think for some of the coaches the Bears have had over the years.
Well, the answer is no.
They probably did ruin some quarterbacks.
Oh, God, yeah. And there's teams you got to put Bart Starr on where he'd have been just an okay player. You know, he was always really good, but you know, it is interesting.
Yeah, but one thing I will always remember about Starr, because I go back to saying, you know, called your old plays. Bart Starr was an incredible play caller.
Oh, God, yeah. I think you were wrong on the first one, though.
And, you know, I don't know. I even think he was a good play caller as a coach. Bart's problem is when he was the Packers coach was that his GM sucked.
Yeah.
But, of course, he was his own GM, so...
Well, that's... Well, what did Johnny Unitas say? You should be able to throw the ball 50 yards, but you should never have to? You should never really have to throw it more than 20 or 25? That's when the guy should come open?
Well, sometimes you have to throw a Hail Mary.
Well, that's true. Because Johnny... But I'm saying, There are very few. I mean, it's like when Jan Hewitt, when he and he won the Heisman in 64, and Roger Staubach won it in 63, and they both showed up for the college All Star, and the coach ran one practice, and the guy said, "Who's your starting quarterback?" He goes, "What are you kidding, Staubach?" I mean, Hewitt didn't belong in the same field as the guy, right? And even Jan Hewitt was a good quarterback, but there are people that are just sort of special, and I think we get to see two of them on Sunday, which is really pretty neat, isn't it? Think about it.
Yeah, it makes me cry every time I see Mahomes.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's tough.
You know, I can't tell you I was on the Mahomes bandwagon in the draft, but it wasn't my job to choose the right quarterback out of that draft.
If Trubisky was on the Chiefs, he wouldn't be Mahomes. He'd be better than he is now, in one man's opinion. Not even close. Andy Reid instead of the chumps here? Just saying.
Well, yeah, we'll talk. We can talk Bears, you know, around draft time, and I'll talk about how I think that Matt Nagy screwed up the season by the way he managed. You remember his name, the quarterback?
Trubisky. He's forgettable.
By the way he managed Trubisky, I think holding him out of the preseason. Throwing too much playbook at him, all of those things, you know, that when he finally dialed it back, things got a little better and it was too late. I hope he doesn't do a repeat of it.
By the way, I still hate
his play calling, too.
Your opinion very seldom changes when I say something, but I will say something here and then we got a dash. You know, Trubisky had surgery on that shoulder the other night.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
I think he may have been playing hurt, and he played better afterwards. Yeah, I think he was. And the reason why he wasn't running is because he was playing hurt.
Maybe, but they let him run a little bit more when he could run a little bit more. He was more effective. But even in addition to that, when it was really dialing back the playbook, you know, I don't know. Maybe the guy's a slow learner. Maybe he's maybe nobody was going to pick it up that fast. But whatever it is, if the guy needed reps to learn the playbook and you didn't give him reps in the preseason, you know, what are you thinking?
Well, they thought they were Super Bowl bound. They weren't. They overestimated their team. SP Futures up, I'm sorry, down 16 now. We're going the other way. SP Futures down 43. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger here as well. SP Futures down 14.75. NASDAQ Futures down 37. We've been kind of up and down a little bit. We were really up and down yesterday. Hey, who the hell is John Delaney who's dropping out of the 2020 Democratic primary race? I didn't even know he was in. Who is he?
You know, it's kind of like so many of these others that popped up. You know, and it was... And I don't know if this is a if cockroaches are a good analogy or the whack-a-mole thing.
Well, you know, part of it, you know, the weird part, I was just about to say, just as I said, who's he, sort of in a denigrating tone, then all of a sudden I'm ready to slap myself upside the head and say, wait a minute, just because he hasn't been on your fire or whatever the hell Trump was on or hasn't been on TV or hasn't been showcased in front of me, the guy could be Solomon, for God knows. And maybe it's up to me to know him, you know, if he's running. I mean, I'm not saying, you know what I'm saying, Carl? It's part of it, we don't want these celebrity politicians, I don't think, because they haven't worked out so hot, in a lot of ways. I mean, some probably have. I mean, I don't know if Arnold did a bad job or whatever. But I mean, I don't even know if Trump's doing that bad of a job, you know, when it's all said and done. But the point being is, there needs to be a better way than having to be a celebrity before you almost look at them with disdain. I mean, this, the guy who's, Stiers looks like a pretty capable sort of guy to me. He looks like he's more successful than Trump and pretty honest in his business, which more than you can say for Trump. Now, why wouldn't I look at him the same way? I mean, you know, I guess I'm trying to figure out which one, if it's my problem or the system's problem or all of the above.
I think it's a little of all of it. That's one of the problems that we have right now is that your political class gets filtered through the media. And so unless you're someone like Bloomberg and, you know, you can spend $250 million spamming Facebook, which is basically what he's done. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Bloomberg is actually, you know, has name recognition because, you know, he used to be a mayor and, you know, things like this, right? Plus, he happens to be a billionaire. And oh, by the way, he made all of his money running a monopoly business.
Yeah.
Which he scammed his way into getting. Okay. Getting the data feeds that nobody else could get their hands on. All right. And then sold that exclusive access and made a whole lot of money. Well, you know what? In an open competitive market, that is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. The problem is, of course, as we all know, when it comes to data feeds and markets, they're hardly open and they're hardly fair.
Right.
But the thing is, I haven't seen a single one of his campaign ads because I don't use Facebook.
Well, I see him on TV all the time.
Well, but I also don't watch network television.
Okay. Well.
But in terms of my, you know, I don't even have network television here at the house at all. I have a cable, but the cable comes in and feeds internet bits. And my equipment
why don't you do something like, why don't you be like, if you put one of the new antennas up, you get about 20 stations for free. Why don't you at least do that so you can watch the Super Bowl game?
Well, I'm actually looking at doing that, but you know, for the Super Bowl game, I'll actually go somewhere and enjoy it. Where I can have a few adult beverages at the same time with some friends.
All right, let me get this straight. You're going to the bar. You've got a square. You're going to the bar, and you're going to be going to hang there.
Well, yeah,
that's not bad.
The game.
But I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, as you know, I've become you know, I really enjoy when you come on. I have a feeling that if we ever sat down for a drink, we would. Whenever I see this Tom Steyer guy, I go, this guy's got no chance whatsoever. And yet, I bet if I put him in a room with Carl, they're two peas in a pod. They both are, really know their stuff about anything having to do with the technology world. They both did real well. I bet he's another Carl. Why wouldn't I like this guy? I mean, he's a Democrat and you're not, but still, I'll bet you guys would agree on 80% of stuff.
We very well might. I mean, you know, one of the problems I have with most of the people in the political sphere, especially when you get into the, you know, in the air or into the part of it where you're running, is that none of the really serious stuff that we have to fix, all right, and the, you know, the poster child, as I've been screaming about for the last 10 years, is the medical thing. None of that fits into a 30-second soundbite.
Right, absolutely.
You can't do it in a 30-second soundbite. And if you try, whatever you say will get twisted around and shoved up your backside.
Right.
All right, because that's just, you know, that's what your opponents will do. Oh my God. I don't know if you folks remember when Bush was running, I think Bush Sr., I don't think it was Bush Jr., it was Bush Sr., the Democrats ran a campaign ad against him that was a stick figure granny being shoved down a flight of stairs in a wheelchair. Okay, because he wanted to, you know, to do some things with Medicare. And what ended up coming out of this ultimately was Medicare Part D, which of course was one of the huge screw jobs that the American public has ever had shoved up its backside. So, you know, but this was, you know, that's what happens when you try to take something that takes more than 30 seconds to explain and it gets into a campaign.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying, Carl, it's the yin and the yang. We're kind of saying the same thing you're saying more eloquently than me. On the one hand, you want people that, from the outside, you don't want Washington as usual. But the second somebody says, well, Carl Denninger's running for president, who the hell's he? Why would I vote for him? He's a nobody. Because they haven't seen.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't have it both ways. Who's the guy? I don't know if he's still alive. Jim Baker, who probably was one of the most intelligent guys ever in Washington. I mean, he worked for, I think, both sides of the aisle. If he would run tomorrow, everybody's going, who the hell's he? Why would I? He hasn't been on TV. I don't recognize his face. I'd rather vote for Oprah.
Yeah, I don't know who he is. Right.
Yeah, I'd rather vote for Oprah. I'd rather vote for Michelle Obama. Or I'd rather vote for, you know, Trump or somebody because I see him all the time and they must be good. It's his name. It's like running for judge in Chicago with a, you know, a Nancy O'Brien name. You know, it's better than where,
right.
than Carl Bartnizak. Who the hell's he? We're not going to vote for him. You know, type of thing. I mean, so it's, you know, you think you want something and then you resist it. You would think you would have the patience or the mental discipline to sit there and go, wait a minute, here's a guy that looks like he did pretty well in business. And by the way, he was a state senator, seemed to do pretty well. Maybe I should listen to his ass. You know, well, no, I won't. I don't even know who this guy is. Kick him off the stage. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You sort of can't have it both ways, and yet we think we can. And you're right. These types of solutions to anything, really, defense spending, health care, welfare. I mean, all you have to do is look at the, debt.org and just have whatever part of the page you look at, it's a problem. I mean, I've been fighting with people for 2 days regarding the president's sort of the Supreme Court decision about the immigration and how people have to be able to take care of themselves. Well, hell, Carl, 50% of this people in this country at the wages they're making, they're all working. They can't take care of themselves without food stamps or without Medicaid half the time. So, I mean, with this whole way that the society has shifted, I don't think people really understand. They don't have the bandwidth to dig into it. Like, that's my job. I do because I have to know the stuff for clients. I don't expect other people to dig through debtclock.org all day. But it does bother
me. Well, here's the thing. Let's spend 30 seconds on that one, okay? Because it's actually a very good point. If you look at the, you know, we just got the GDP number, okay? Right, 2.1, I think it was. All right. So I went back and I took the 12-month running number off of the BEA's data tables. And the gross GDP number off the BEA tables for the last 12 months is 4%. Okay, so that's nominal. All right. Now, of course, what they use to get real out of that is this made-up thing that they call the deflator, right? That's where that's their inflation gauge,
right?
So that says that if real GDP is 2.1, then inflation's 1.9, right? 4 minus 1.9, right? However, the fiscal side of things, the federal deficit was 5.6% last year.
Right.
Right. Now that's inflation. I mean, Friedman. Inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. Right. So in real terms, GDP was negative.
Sure was. It's been that way for 10 years.
Yeah. It's about -1%. Okay. And that's and almost -2% actually, because the monetary inflation is about 6. So if inflation is 6. And nominal GDP is 4, real GDP is -2, right? Well, why is the middle class and everybody outside of the 1%, why are they getting hosed to within an inch of their life? Well, this is because this has been going on for 15 years, and compound that 2% a year over 15 years, and all of a sudden you don't have any money.
if you were to pull Milton Friedman and clone the guy and drag him up and just show him the numbers you showed him, he would say, here's what you have now. You have a struggling middle class, no savings, and you've got asset prices going off the chart, and that's exactly what we have. And the idea that baseball teams are worth, back to Amazon, could go up $250 like last night.
And you know what? I mean, I looked at their earnings report briefly. I didn't read the whole thing. Normally I do, and I will in the next day or so, because that's one of those companies that I just pay attention to because of their size.
Right. Oh, yeah.
All right. But the reality is that I don't care how big of a blowout the number was in real terms. I don't care how well they did in terms of, violating trend, okay, to the upside, which obviously they did. But that's not the point. The point is they're still selling it at, 400 times earnings?
Well, if you multiply it as 6-something by 4, you're talking $25 a year. And the stock was
right.
The stock went up at one point last night, was up $250. So just on the rise last night, that's 10 times earnings, right?
Right, just a change.
Yeah, just a change. So right now,
but, that was the thing, was I looked at the reaction when the report came out. I was sitting here with my screen up, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. But that's kind of what it is. And yet, if you take that handful of companies out, then, where's the S&P, where's the NASDAQ, where's the Dow, right? And here is the 900-pound gorilla in the room. When you have companies that are selling at that kind of a multiple, they go down just as fast as they go up when things go wrong.
Well, let me bring it right back. Let me do something real stupid here. I'm going to pretend we're in class, all right? So, and we're going to talk about it, very briefly, because I don't want anybody to switch me off. Capital asset pricing models. And I'm going to say that if the interest rate is 10%, and I'm bringing $100,000 a year in, you're going to tell me whatever it is, whether it's a building, whether it's a taxi service, whatever it is, it's worth $1 million, right? $100,000 a year at 10%, that's the price, because $100 million times 10% is $100,000, correct? So if I were to drop the rate down to like 7.5%. Or 5%. 5% is easy. Now it's worth $2 million, right? But now the problem, Carl, is when you get to the edge, it's always on the edge. It's, I need to drink enough water for the marathon, but if I drink too much, I kill myself, right? So when you get to the edge, what is this building, what is this business worth if interest rates are 1%? Well, I'm not about to give you $10 million for the place, or if they're a 10th of 1%, I'm not going to give you $100 million for the place. Because now all of a sudden there's a lot of risk there. What if they go the other way? I mean, I was looking at some of these. I mean, and my sports guys tell me, these guys can raise prices and do whatever they want. But I'll tell you what, a baseball team, I got news for you. You can stick that thing up your behind if you think that's really, if anybody would pay $1 billion or $2 billion for it. If all of a sudden interest rates were even 5%, who the hell can pay, $100 million a year in VIG before you even start anything else?
Right, and that's the problem is that. What you have right now is, those models, the mathematics works. However, as that kind of distortion gets shoved into the system, which should never, and in a system where you don't have this being done intentionally, it'll never happen because people will push back on it. All right. But in a system where you have, you know, Powell getting up there and saying, oh, by the way, we threw all this money into the repo market because there was a problem there. But that's not actually an expansion of our balance sheet. It's not an expansion, a permanent expansion of liquidity, and therefore it's not QE. And you sit there and you say, how does this guy not get let off the stage in handcuffs?
Very specifically, by the way, once in a while I remember what I have to ask you, once in a while. If you listen to him, and I was doing an order for a client, my brother comes running and he goes, do you believe what he just said? I think he said, Carl, that we won't be happy until the banks have over $1 trillion on deposit back at the Fed.
One five. He was talking about having, he said that he believes that the level of reserves that have to be in the system for the repo market function is about 1.5.
All right, so what is he seeing that causes him to have his favored banks need $1.5 trillion extra cash just in case something happens? What in God's name? Does he know there's an asteroid coming at New York, or what does he know?
Well, he knows something, and see, that's part of the problem is we have a credulous media. You know, he does these press conferences, right? And you get the Steve Leismans of the world that, you know, that stand up and ask these, you know, these stupid questions. You give me one question aimed at the guy and I could skewer him. He'd literally stutter his way off the stage. And yet, you know, you've got this whole set of credentialed media in the room, 100 of them in there, and not one question that actually goes to the point of the matter. And they let him weasel word his way out of whatever they do ask with no follow-up.
Right.
And I'm like, what is wrong with you people? You know, this guy, I mean, when you look at what's going on right now, the whole reason we have asset markets that look like this is because of this nonsense.
Sure it is.
And the problem with it is it looks good on paper. Trump loves it. All right. You got Mayor Mike that he's not going to say anything negative about that. He doesn't want to blow up. And yet, at the same time, you have Elizabeth Warren saying, well, you know what, if you were stupid and borrowed $200,000 to get a sociology degree, we're going to wipe that out. But then she tells the dad who took his money and used it to put his kid through school, oh, too bad, tough cookies.
Right. Well, where did we go? I mean, I think Carl, the purpose of the Fed, I've always thought, is yes, they are the banker of last resort. They should monitor the system in such a way where there's reasonable men, okay, would say that's enough in the system and everything looks okay. They should make sure the reserves are stuck within the banks. Reserve requirements should be higher in the bank than it is, okay? All that stuff should be done properly, and we all know that if something crazy happens, if an asteroid does land on L.A. and all of a sudden a million young people that have million-dollar insurance policies all need to get paid at the same time, which we never would have anticipated, then the Fed is supposed to spring into action and provide that kind of liquidity. What is making them think now that they need to do it before? Do they already
they
see
know something
or what?
That's the problem. Is they know something is coming.
What's
or
the,
at
what
least
is,
they suspect it. Okay? You know, this is the old, you know, we're going to take a bunch of antibiotics because there's a bug flying around, right? Which is, by the way, is really stupid to do.
Right.
But it's what they're doing, and at the same time, it's sort of like the guy who's got a really bad heroin addiction, and if he tries to or alcohol for that matter, tries to withdraw off of it, he might die. And so you have you see the sad stories all the time. Somebody who's a really bad drunk, they literally have to have that half bottle of vodka in the morning, and if they don't, they could go into cardiac arrest. Well, you have a market that has gotten addicted to this idea since the 2008 crash that there's always, you know, we're always going to have interest rates at, you know, 0.5%. and oh, by the way, the Fed is going to pay banks the Fed funds rate basically to stick cash in at the Fed and leave it there, which is even more insane if you think about it, because what is the purpose of having excess cash as a bank? It is to go lend it out and grow the economy.
Well, it's exactly. I don't. How do you not look at? I mean, the banking industry is an industry. I mean, we've done some work here with some credit unions, and they're pretty much all the same in some regards. But I look at the industry, and I since I we had a couple people on from different credit unions, I've been doing some research in that area. And I go to Harris Bank, and I'm going to say, you know, there probably is a free check in there somewhere, but by and large, they want $15 a month if you're under $5,000. There's no interest. And the credit cards are $25. Okay.
Right.
Now you go to any credit union of well, there's like five or six big ones here in Illinois. You go to any one of those credit unions, they're going to pay you a percent or a percent and a half in the bank. Their credit cards,
right.
Their credit cards are under 10. And if you switch a balance over, they pay you. So how is it?
Well, yeah. And you know what's funny about that is that we've got them here too. Okay. And when I set my LLC up here in Florida, that allowed me to petition to be allowed into one of the local credit unions because now I'm technically an employer, even though I don't have any employees.
Wow.
And so that in turn, when my daughter turned 18, she's like, well, you know, I need a bank account. I said, no, you're not going to need a bank. The bank's going to screw you as soon as, you know, you want a credit card or whatever. He said, you're going to go over to the credit union. She's like, well, but you know, but I don't qualify. Yes, you do qualify. You live in my household.
Yeah. Well, some of them, all you have to do is join for $5.
Right. Well, there's PenFed, which is the interestingly enough, Pentagon Federal, okay, which has offices all over the country. $5 in a share account, and you can have an account there.
Right, right. So what I'm saying is, yeah. How does Paul and the rest of the gnomes sitting around a table not sit there and go, wait a minute, the people that we're giving all this money to are not even remotely competitive to people that we aren't. What are we doing here? I mean, it's one thing if a credit union wanted to get their name on the block and is charging 9.5% on a credit card and the banks are charging, 10.5%. Well, I'm not going to fight
right.
That battle, Carl. But 9.5% to 25%? I mean, what planet are we on?
Well, you know, part of the thing, I mean, if you think back, okay, because you've been in this business long enough, and, you know, I've been watching it and in it one way or another long enough as well. If you remember all of the big institutional non-deposit taking banks, you know, the old Goldmans of the world, they were all partnerships. And so not only did they have their own skin in the game, because if they screwed up, they were personally liable. All right. But in addition to that, the kind of screwball nonsense that we have going on right now didn't happen.
Right.
And then you had the SNLs that got into all the hinky deals with the oil patch. Okay. And they blew up.
All right,
since then, the conversion into public companies. I mean, what do you got now? You know, the XLF.
Well, wait a minute. When you talk about Chicago, you lived here, so you know what I'm talking about. Chicago,
oh, yeah.
Chicago, every neighborhood had a savings and loan. And,
yeah.
And I'm going to say, Carl, there was no better institution for the neighborhood. I'm not talking about Silverado and those kinds of places that once they got to do, they kept petitioning the government to do more and more and more, and they basically stuck themselves up their own behind, basically. But I'm talking about the people in Evergreen Park, Oaklawn, where 85% of their stuff were mortgages in Evergreen Park and Oaklawn, and they charged 6% for a mortgage, you got 3% for a passbook, and for the other 3%, they paid the people not $1 billion a year, a regular wage, and by the way, they bought uniforms for the Little League team. So there was nothing wrong with that industry until Carl Volcker and the gang that caused the problems, all of a sudden now these guys are paying 11% on passbook, and 6% they're getting on the mortgage. Well, that's not going to work. I mean, we put
right. That's essentially what I mean.
My first
passbook account was at a savings and loan.
Me too.
In my hometown when I was a kid.
Me too. Evergreen Park savings and loan.
Yeah.
But I'm saying when Carl Volcker, like everybody, you look back on these big geniuses, and I'm not saying the man just died recently. I mean, I would love to spend a railroad car ride with him to Seattle, for God's sake, and pick his brain. But the point is the same, well, I'm going to say what I think here, and you tell me whether you think I'm nuts or not, is at the end of the inflationary era, when I first got on the trading floor, it was, Volcker was involved, the interest rates were back up to, I think Robin got 15.8 for a 6-month CD at Continental Bank, the dear departed Continental Bank. Talk about unbelievable, huh, Carl? And so people were paying that amount of money, and Dr. J and I just started trading. And I looked around and said, Jan, other than the cost push, it was a little bit of cost push inflation because the CPI kept spitting out saying that there was inflation, even though there really wasn't, Carl. It's an amazingly lagging indicator. on both ends. Okay. So on that end, it was saying there was inflation, and there wasn't any. So I really think, in retrospect, what's his name? I just had his name. Volcker could have let his foot off. He really had his foot stomped on that pedal. He could have pulled that off probably a year earlier, maybe saved 50% of the savings. Though they had a rough couple of years, but I think they might have survived. They wouldn't all gone out of business. I think he could have done that, and I believe if he would have done that, and we still had half as many savings and loans around, a lot of the 2007 stuff would not have happened, because there was no replacement for the savings and loans for mortgages, except Fannie and Freddie,
right.
And we saw the disaster there. But I'm seeing the exact same thing right now, Carl. I'm seeing, even if we were to think that the CPI people are straight, which I don't, and neither do you, even if we thought they were straight, it is such a lagging indicator that one of these days it's going to pop out, even though you and I have noticed it for 3 or 4 years. I mean,
and that's one of the problems, is that you've got this idea embedded into the minds of both traders and also just ordinary people, that these guys sort of know what they're doing. And part of, it's every now and then you hear a question come up that actually goes at this, which is, well, what do you say to the guy who's retired, he's risk averse, how is he supposed to survive? Okay, he's got a portfolio, he's got some cash, but how is he supposed to survive by, other than just chewing through it, all right, and ending up with nothing?
Carl, hold on to that thought, buddy. We got to go to break. S&P futures down 13.50, NASDAQ futures down 28. Come back, we'll finish that one, because that's a key thought. But that's what I do for a living, Carl, is trying to manage people's money. And tell you what, it's tough. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Carl Denninger, Mr. Matt Weber. SP Futures down 13 now. NASDAQ Futures down 25.75. This is after a wild day yesterday. We were down in the 30s a couple times, finished up. Now we're back down kind of where we finished up. So very bizarre. Dow down 135 over in Europe. Oh, individual stocks and earnings last night. Caterpillar, which missed, down 2. We've got IBM with Ginni Rometty leaving. The stock's up 5%. So Carl Denninger firm stock rallies as Carl leaves. I didn't want to read that headline, Carl. You know, stock rallies as Carl gets booted out of the office. No, we don't want to do that. DAX up 56.4%. Oh, by the way, Electronic Arts is down 164, so they're about even. And I guess the big one is Amazon, up 204, was up 250 last night, as they make $6 instead of $4. Do the math, it's 25 hours a year. Well, whatever, I guess. It's free to wait these days. FTSE up 51.7%, CAC round up 25.4. Over in Asia, the Nikkei up 227, that's a full 1%, but they've been getting hammered a few days. Carl, are these guys, when they extended the Lunar New Year, did they extend the time that the exchange is going to be closed as well? I think they did, didn't they?
I don't know. You know, this whole thing, this whole viral thing, there's the amount of craziness that's flying around with the relationship to that is just, it's nuts, and yet, I mean, I understand why people would get very, very worried about the idea that, hey, you know, we might all die, right?
Well, that would be Hang, let me finish this for a second. Hang Seng down 136.5. Bonds pretty much where they were yesterday, 154 in the 10-year, minus 0.42 in the Bund, minus 0.05 in the Japan. Oil up 30 cents, but wow, 52.44. A solid $10, Carl, before, lower than when the Iran stuff started. Natural gas 183. I never thought I'd see that. RBOB 150, and gold is down 550, but still 1583. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. All kinds of issues, but the significant concern is that earlier rollover crash that happened about an hour ago. Still working on that. I-94 northbound, up in the northern suburbs, heading toward Wisconsin just before Route 176, which is Rockland Road. There was a rollover crash that happened earlier this morning. Still has the four right lanes blocked, so congestion is plentiful up there as crews are on the scene trying to get that cleared up, and that's a big issue on I-94 way up north heading toward the Wisconsin border. Back in the city, there's another issue on the outbound side of the Edens at Peterson Avenue. There's a crash there that folks are having to navigate around, and then coming on the inbound Kennedy just before Keeler Avenue, there's a crash. So the Edens and Kennedy highly affected this morning with accidents. Coming in on the Eisenhower or the Stevenson, you'll see normal traffic volumes for this time of morning. No accidents to report. Same for Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. Suburban tollways are all quiet, so that's good news. We did get a little bit of snowfall last night, and that's causing a little bit slower travel times, some of the outlying areas. We have some crashes off the expressways. Old McHenry Road at US 12, which is Rand Road in the northwestern suburbs, there's a crash. Just north of there, Route 176 at Fairfield Road, there's a crash. And just north of there on Fairfield at Gossel Road, there's an accident. So some slick conditions up in the northwest suburbs. Looks like we have an issue. Hutchins Road at Stearns School Road, there is an accident. And then out west, in suburban Wayne, Powis Road at Stearns Road, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of cloudy skies and fog as it's been all week. We haven't seen the sun in at least a week. Also some snow flurries. We had some accumulation overnight. Nothing more than a dusting, but keep that in mind because that's causing some slick spots. Right now it's snowy and 32 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 37. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 44. In sports, Blackhawks were off last night. They return to action tomorrow night at Arizona. They'll take on the Coyotes, who lost to the Kings last night, 3-2. NBA basketball, Bulls and Suns were both off. Bulls are at the Nets tonight. Suns host the Thunder later on this evening. College hoops, it was number 19 Illinois over Minnesota, 59-51. Arizona won at Washington, 75-72.
Chief. I'm going to say Kevin probably could critique me on this. South Bend, which has usually the worst weather in the world, I think my senior year, we were 31 days in a row without seeing the sun. We're pushing that here, Manny.
Wow.
We've been a couple weeks here, haven't we?
We've been a couple weeks, yeah. And supposedly on Super Bowl Sunday here coming up in a couple of days, it's going to be 51 and sunny. And it'll be the first time we see the sun, and it'll be the first time in like a month that it cracks 50. So
that's what the big guy upstairs can see the game, for God's sake.
That'll be a nice day.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
But, yeah, it's been pretty gloomy where it's just overcast and foggy and hazy every day with no sign of light.
Carl, I have a question for you, and I'm trying to be Spock here, if you're a tricky. I'm not saying I agree. I'm saying I understand. Now, there is a difference. Because we're talking about mortgages and taxes and how this all not working out so much for people, some people. Some people it is, and more power to them. They're in the right industries, and good for them. And Eddie Weber and a lot of other people are, and, you know, those are good things. But the weird part is I'm trying to equate, I will put them in the same sentence, even though I don't think they think alike at all. What's her name? SOC and Elizabeth Warren. And some of the people.
AOC.
AOC. Whatever. What's the difference? We know who she is. So you look at this quote wealth tax, right? And you say to yourself, I think it's a really horrible idea, Carl. I mean, what I'm trying to do now is look at not what people say, stupid or otherwise, because I can say some stupid things too, but I'm looking at what they saw to make them say it in the first place. Well, I got a, email from one of our listeners, and even though I don't every day talk about what I get from these people, Carl, I learned an amazing amount from some of this stuff, and some of it is from groups or people that I absolutely disagree with. But you know what? If all I get is stuff I agree with, I don't learn a thing, right? But anyway, one guy sends me a thing from the North Shore, and there's this gorgeous house. I mean, who knows if people have put holes in the bathroom walls or not? I don't know. But it looks to me like some massive place up on Lake Forest or some damn place, you know, with the big stone front gate with the metal things and the whole bit. It's got to be acre and a half, two maybe. I'm going to say I still, you know, do a lot of work with people in the construction business because I love it, and I back them to do some stuff and things like that. But I'm going to say, Carl, I don't think I could duplicate this place for less than 2.5. Maybe 220.
Right.
I mean, price cut from $1.1 million to like $775,000. Taxes now up to $35,000.
Well, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I was saying to Audrey, I go, and she's in real life, Aud, you couldn't give me this place. Because it's probably the people living in there, even though it looks gorgeous, it probably is a spectacular place. I'll bet the roof needs to be done, which has got to be $40,000. The windows probably, if it's 20 years old, I'll bet they haven't done spit along the way, where the kitchen maybe needs some upgrades, the bathroom. I'll bet the thing is $200,000 just for me to get it up to where it's supposed to be. Meanwhile, paying $3,000 a month to other people. And what I'm looking at, Carl, is if, and then I look at the Major League Baseball teams. It doesn't surprise me, and I don't know if she could articulate it this well. She probably can't. I'm giving her crap on the manure. But if I'm an AOC, I wonder, honestly, why Carl Denninger, if he buys the United Center, he has to pay taxes of $1 million a year. If he buys the Bulls, he doesn't pay squat.
He doesn't pay any taxes, right.
Just by owning the Bulls. And yet, by owning the United Center, I gotta believe what the taxes are, probably $5 million a year. I don't even know. I mean, well, hell, if the building we're in now is $250,000, what do you think that is, Manny? $25 million? I mean, right. We're not even on the same planet. I mean, so, and yet you can buy the Bulls for $1 billion or the Hawks, and you don't pay squat. So I can see why somebody would say, well, that's not fair, right? I mean, why is this entire burden being put on property owners? How did they die and go to hell? You know, all of a sudden.
Well, it's not very hard to figure out. I mean, what do you do about that, right? If you're one of the people who gets screwed.
Well, yeah, I guess you could.
Short of picking up a gun and showing up at the next county meeting,
right?
I mean, how do you stop it? You know, we had a spate of that here in this area in Florida, where they raised the property tax rate by about 10% one year.
Well, that's an easy year.
They had their public meeting, and I went. And they had conveniently, quote unquote, located it so that 90% of the people who live here and own property, most of whom are military, could not possibly get off their jobs and get there at the time of the meeting. I mean, they literally rigged the hearing so that the people who they were screwing could not show up and complain. So I, you know, being a guy who can pretty much go do what I want, I showed up to, you know, to raise hell for them. And was told while I was making, you know, everyone gets their 3 minutes, right? That's the way those things work. And while I'm doing my 3 minutes, one of the commissioners is sitting there at the desk with his laptop, looking up my property records and my tax records, and turns around and calls me a fat cat that can afford it.
That's
from the desk.
Yeah, right. Really, that's cool.
In the middle of the hearing. I about fell out of my chair. I mean, I wanted to walk up there and strangle him and drag him outside.
Yeah.
Of course, I would have got arrested. But, you know, but the thing is, I mean, this is the kind of thing that goes on. And do you know where it came from? The entire thing came from a handful of people who they busted for something, you know, probably drunk driving, who knows, right? Threw them in jail, and they had some kind of a medical problem. And they ended up being taken over to the local facility, the local medical facility, which is known nationally for being like the third worst price gouger in the United States.
Really?
And rather than go after those guys and say, okay, it's enough of this monopolist BS, you people cut this out or you're going to go to jail, they stuck it to the people who live here.
So you paid this huge hospital bill?
Yeah, they paid this huge hospital, the county did, and then they turn around and jack taxes to pay for it.
But I don't see how... Literally, if you gave me that place on the North Shore, well, as a trader, Carl, you know, if you gave it to me, I would say price cut $400,000, somebody grab it, and I'd be $400,000 that are richer. But you couldn't give it to me to live there.
Oh, well, I had a piece of property just off Lake Cook, okay? I have the address, I look up at Zillow, you know, because the tax records are public, right? And I look at that and I go, good God, I could buy a car for the tax bill now.
Right, well, yeah.
You got to be kidding me! You know, I mean, I'm glad I bailed when I did, but there was no way that I would be living in that place. I mean, it was not a mansion; it was a nice house, but it wasn't a mansion by any stretch of the imagination. There's no blankety blanking way that somebody of even reasonably decent means, okay, you know, making, you know, $100,000 to $150,000 a year, you couldn't possibly afford that place.
There's places
on taxes.
There's places on the south side now. In the lower income areas that are $50,000 where the taxes are $6,000. And if you went into Flossmoor, which when I was young, it was Lake Forest, then Flossmoor as the two highest, Flossmoor on the south side. People don't even remember that now. Well, now it's, I'm going to say you can buy, you know, a McMansion down there for $175,000 and your taxes are going to be $30,000. So the taxes are going to be, what, three times your mortgage? Two and a half times your mortgage? I mean, so it's unconscionable, Carl, and I can see where what I don't want to have happen, and neither do you, is for everybody who we elect to anything looking around for stuff we don't pay on as a future source of revenue. I mean, Maddie Weber and I have had this, you know, argument forever, discussion. I mean, I love them, so I'm not arguing with them, but on the one hand, you look at, you know, even booze, which I, you know, obviously I like to go to the bar and tip a glass once in a while. Even to me, There's a societal cost to that, right? Or marijuana or gambling, right? Now, gambling, for instance, I like to gamble. I love to play poker. I mean, I haven't played it in 40 years, but I love to play poker. And so would we look at it as Matty Weber gets to go to the racetrack, or me or you, and we go up in the afternoon, have a couple beers and bet on the ponies. For us, that's fine, okay? We're going to bring our couple hundred bucks, and we're going to bet, you know, whatever, $20 a race times 10 races, and we're good to go. But
right.
But for the part I don't like is for Jay Pritzker, he sees a mass of people all losing and money coming to his pocket. It's a total different view of the world. It's not like we should be able to go have a good time. That part I get. But to them, it's not about we might be able to actually beat the Perry Mutual World that way, that day, get a couple of winners and walk away with a few bucks on a good day. And then if we don't, we lose, you know, 200, we can afford it, you know, type of thing. Not 800 or 1,000. I'm not being a fat cat here, but I'm saying I can bet $10 a race for 10 races. And then if I go once every 2 months, which I don't, I mean, I should be able to do that. I get that part. But the motivation from the other side is, hey, all we know is the handle's 20 million. We get two, right? It's just another way of taxing people, like the lottery, like everything else. And at some point, you got to say, enough, guys. It's just enough. Start worrying, like you're saying, about managing what you have instead of getting more.
I mean, yeah, it's just, I mean, you know, I look at the situations going on with stuff like that. And, you know, about a year ago, my mother passed, and I had to, you know, I had to do all the estate stuff, right?
Yep.
And what had happened in her area, she wouldn't leave. I told her that she ought to get the blankety blank out of where she was in Michigan and you know, move in with me. Well, she wouldn't do it because she had friends there and, you know, thinking, okay, fine. You know, she wanted to die in her own home. She did. And, you know, bless her heart, you get to be in your mid-80s and you have one bad week at the end, you don't complain about this, right?
No.
But then when I go to clean things up, I start looking at the value, you know, okay, the only thing that's really of value here is this house, right? And then I'm looking at, okay, what's the history of the value of this house? You know, when was it bought? What was paid for it? What's it worth now? Yada, yada, yada. And by the way, what's the tax history? And over the time that they owned it, which really wasn't all that long because they consolidated two residences, the taxes had almost tripled.
Yeah.
All right? And as a result, when it was finally sold, adjusting for condition and, you know, depreciation and everything else, because they never, you know, they never went and did the granite countertops and all that stuff. But you take that, it actually went down in value, and that's in nominal dollars. Okay, well, when they bought it, how much was a gallon of gas?
Carl, when you come to Chicago, we'll grab Aud and we'll go out and grab an adult beverage, and she will rattle off chapter and verse of condos, say, on the southwest side that, you know, 15 years ago people bought for 150 grand. They've not really had much in the way of increase in their salaries. So they've just lived in them, okay? So you and I would walk
right in
and say, it's a nice enough place. It needs a new rug, needs painting. By the way, the kitchen needs an upgrade of appliances. So it needs, you know, whatever, 15, 20 grand, not 100. You know, something you and I could do on weekends probably. I suspect you're pretty handy. So we could do that. Okay, the price hasn't gone up like at all of an equivalent place. So the 150, now that it's deteriorated some, it's really worth 130 because you haven't put the money in.
You got to put 20 into it.
But,
yeah,
but also the taxes are double. So these things are all gone for 120. From what people
bought, here's the problem. It's not really 120. If you take the inflation in purchasing power over that time, it's 60.
Right. Well, the research I did on the property taxes here, because I was trying to do a thing on primary education, and really it's in the tax bill. It's 60% of the tax bill, or 55. Spell it out for you. So in Illinois, if you take the last 20 years, I've been going since 2000 on this stuff, that I found this one article, and I should have kept it, but I could find it again, I suppose. If we put a tax freeze on in Illinois right now, at the rate people's income is moving up, which isn't very much, and in the median number, it will take 28 years for people to get back to the same percentage of their income as it was in 2000. Carl, these numbers are startling. And you wonder why, you know, people... It is higher. That's why you wonder why the people in government... That's why I was, you know, fighting with Lou yesterday and Kevin a little bit earlier this morning. I don't think they either don't want to understand or they're ignorant. They don't pay to spend the time. I mean, I'm sure Lou and Kevin are correct that the Supreme Court and Obama's policy vis-a-vis the immigrants coming in, you want somebody who's not going to pile into your whatever, your charitable things on day one, right? I get that, and I'm sure it's probably legal, but I just wonder if the people that are doing it realize that if somebody comes across the border, he gets a job day one. His wife goes to work helping, whatever daycare facility. She has a job day one. At any of the market prices for any of those jobs, you're talking about somebody who qualifies for food stamps, qualifies for Medicaid. Half your population qualifies for this crap because they don't make enough. I don't think these people understand that. That's a thing that frosts me. I don't know if you think I'm nuts about that as well, but.
Well, they do, but see, the solution to this problem is all on the cost side. It's not,
right.
The answer is never to write another, write another check on your Visa card.
Right.
And yet nobody, absolutely nobody on either side of the aisle wants to take any of this on, because if you do, Amazon doesn't sell for $2,000 a share.
Well, how do you, as a politician, and I'll run this one by you, we have a couple minutes, people will say, and since I had him for class twice, I'm going to say my favorite professor was George Stigler. I liked him way more than Milton Friedman, because I love political economy, behavioral economy, more than I do Milton Friedman throwing calculus up on a page. Because I was over calculus by that point, Carl. Let's put it that way. And I'm really over it now. But I was over it even then. And so the day I got out of pre-med, I decided I never want to see calculus again. So, and then I didn't. So, but he would say, don't ever think that you've heard me say this sort of before, don't ever think that politicians don't operate like a business. He goes, whenever somebody says we should operate like a business, government like a business, he goes, the man is stone cold ignorant, or a lady, whoever said that. It is a business. They're very good at their business. It's just not the same as your business.
Right.
they will do exactly what they need to do to remain elected. And when you look at the population, I have a piece of paper buried here because I just sort of cleaned up and read all this stuff again. Piece of paper that said a huge survey in this country says that people want the government to balance the budget, but they don't want any cuts in entitlements, defense, and like something else, like 95% of the budget. So people, it's not surprising that the government acts the same way as most of society that has,
right,
10 or 15% of their income on their credit cards or something. They're stretched by that amount.
Except exponential series that are maintained at the same growth rate always eventually blow up.
Right, but if you look at the way politicians tax people, okay, they're gonna say, if you're a Chicago politician with a big, I'm gonna say allowance, for lack of a better term, and you have a car, and maybe you're married, or maybe you got a girlfriend, or you're just not that way in the first place, my first two places I'm gonna tax are parking garages and strip clubs. I don't go to either one of them. I don't go there. This is a good place to tax. Okay. And maybe I'll raise the parking meters. Cause guess what? As an alderman, I'm not getting a ticket. So let's go to the place. So that's what you do, right? By the way, I stopped going to the racetrack. Let's raise the price of the racing form. You do whatever it is that you do, but you're politically, you're never going to say, we have on the ballot here, we have a ballot amendment for, this year. Or this month, I guess it is, Maddie. Where are we going? In March? That says we can have a graduated income tax. Because the Constitution says you can't. On the ballot, nowhere does it say we can mess with the pension stuff, which is what's killing the state. Because there isn't a politician on earth that is going to vote for that and put it on the ballot, because all those people, you can guarantee that the people that are on the pensions or the municipal employees are going to show up for that election. So,
absolutely, yeah. And you would not expect it to be otherwise, right?
Right. No, but I'm saying somewhere along the line, these people do operate as a business. It's just their business.
People get very wonky about, that's not really, yes, it is.
Yes, it is. I mean, you can predict what these guys are doing right out of the gate, because that's what gets them in. Like you were mentioning earlier about Bloomberg. I mean, he's not going to challenge, the major stuff, unless, you and I would do it differently. And guess what? You and I wouldn't get a vote. I'm going to say you and I would drop back to, if I had that kind of money, I would buy a quarter page in the New York Times and Washington Post every week. And I would say, here's my policy on medical care. and maybe I'd help have you help me write it because you know more way more about it. And I would put down some decent stuff. And what's going to happen is one of the articles, somebody's going to say, well, I don't agree with that, and not vote for us, even though the other 90% they might, right? So that's a problem with a single issue voter. They're not going to vote for you because of a single issue. They're going to vote against you for a single issue, right?
Right.
So that therein lies the problem. So look who we get. You know, Tweedledee and Tweedledee.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah. So anywho, so where did you move? You got 10 seconds.
Well, up into the woods, more northish and eastish.
Do the people at least have teeth?
Away from the beach and closer to mountain.
You're not the only guy with teeth, are you?
No, I'm not.
All right, well, that's good. Carl, thank you very much. SP Futures down 1250. I don't think that was all politically correct, but I had to ask. NASDAQ Futures down 27. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.